Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 46 of Nerd Pride Radio. 46. Oh, you're going to love this. Division 46 of the American Psychological Association is specifically the division of media psychology whose mission is studying the interaction of psychology and technology. All right, look, I got my college degree in psychology. I currently work in technology. I do this podcast. This is me, Division 46. I thought that was so cool. And their website's pretty awesome, too. Lots of cool, interesting psychological technology articles. I love it. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. No, really. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. Oh, my co-host this week? Momenshans, fresh off their European tour. All right, welcome, guys. Oh, and also, before I go any further, I forgot to mention this last week, but there is a Kickstarter out there, for Mecha versus Kaiju. It's an independent game by Jonathan Wright over at Wrightworks, and it's exactly what it sounds like. It's Pacific Rim, but put into an RPG game based on the Fate Core rules, and it's really cool looking. And, I was gonna bring it up last week when they were still needing a bunch of money, and I just checked it this morning, I think he just crossed over. There's only a couple days left of the Kickstarter, and I think he's just made his initial goal, and now he's looking for the stretch goals. But if you're interested in that, I will put a link, in the show notes somewhere, and you guys can head on over to his Kickstarter and donate some money and, get a copy of this game when it comes out, because it looks really good. But, having done that, what's it time for? Oh, updates. Oh, I haven't done updates in a while. Last week I talked about podcasts and the new ones that I'm listening to, and I mentioned some of the other stuff I listened to, and I completely dropped the ball because there's a bunch of other stuff that I listened to that I completely forgot that I had. And so I've actually written down a list this time so that I can actually update you guys. I also have a thread for this on the forums with all of them listed with links to where you can find all of them. But the ones I do listen to, I listen to this one, obviously, the WTF podcast with Mark Maron. I've talked about that many, many times, interviews with comedians mostly, and Mark Maron is just genius at what he does. These are great and insightful. The Bugle is actually probably my favorite podcast out there right now. The Bugle is John Oliver and Andy Saltzman, British comedians doing their take on the world news, a very Daily Show sort of thing. John Oliver just recently left the Daily Show. He's getting his new show on HBO coming up soon, but they are just funny guys. Love The Bugle. The minute I see that thing on my Kindle, it is the first thing I listen to. I also listen to Infinite Monkey Cage, which is a BBC radio show. I forgot about it because it only comes out. They do two series a year. Series is what they call seasons over there, apparently. And so every summer, every winter, you get six episodes. So 6 weeks of Infinite Monkey Cage, and then it's gone again for 6 months. And Infinite Monkey Cage is a panel of comedians and scientists talking in depth about some science topic for the week. Fascinating. Walking the Room, I've mentioned a million times. Fear the Boot is probably the most popular gaming podcast out there right now. Filmsack, this is a crew of guys that they pick a movie. Usually not a great movie, although sometimes it is, but always sincere. Even when it's a bad movie, it's a sincere bad movie usually. And, And they all watch it on Netflix streaming, and they warn you ahead of time what's coming up, so you have a chance to watch it yourself. And then they just pick the thing apart. They sack it, as it were. And they're just always entertaining. I love – even for movies, it's best when I've seen the movie. But even if I haven't seen the movie, great time. Fofop, I think I mentioned that last week with Will Anderson. Probably Science, I mentioned, Comedy Film Nerds. And then, of course, the Dan Carlin podcasts, his Hardcore History and Common Sense. I listen to both of those religiously. Hardcore History is probably the best produced thing out there. He's given you, yeah, it takes months to get you an episode, but when he does, it's usually like 3 hours, 4 hours. He's had 6 hour podcasts before, for whatever topic he's talking about. Awesome stuff. And then what's left? Oh, and then Top 5 Podcast. Some guys from, what is their group? Major Spoilers? Is that their main podcast? And I don't listen to Major Spoilers. I don't listen to the other podcasts they do. They've got several. But I do listen to Top 5. These guys are some huge, you know, comic book gaming nerd kind of guys. And every week they pick out a top 5 topic, you know, top 5 villains, top 5 desserts, top 5 whatever. And then they take turns going around the table and they each present their top 5 list, and they go in order countdown from 5 to 1. And it's just light, fun entertainment. Good stuff. I think that's all of them. And I will give a mention to my brother when I made my list of podcasts and talked about what I listened to. He suggested Harmontown by Dan Harmon, creator of Community and other shows. And so I have listened to 30 minutes. Apparently, all of his podcasts run about 2 hours. I have listened to the first 30 minutes of one episode. I just was listening to it. It was in my ears as I was setting all this up to get ready. And, oh, my God, that stuff is funny. I mean, I've listened to 30 minutes. So maybe, for all I know, everything else about this podcast sucks. It could happen. But from the first 30 minutes I've gotten, oh, my God, this thing is good. So Harmontown, I suggest it, really. And then that's it for my updates, which leads me directly to the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list. And then the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And speaking of the master list, this whole episode, well, at least the meticulously plotted portion of this episode, is going to be
fingertips.
Hey, I actually had music prepared for my new segment this time. Here's what's happened to me. I am looking over my master list, and I have something like 50 topics on this master list, 50 topics for things that I could do on the podcast. And a lot of them I keep pushing down the list because they're just not well developed enough, or it's like an item that's waiting for something else to go with it to make a full segment. These are things that I don't have a lot on, but they're also interesting, and I don't want to forget about them. And so some of them have been there since the very beginning of the podcast, 3 years ago, and I just haven't quite found the right material. So what I have done this week is I have taken all of those old topics that I just haven't gotten to and haven't gotten to. I have put them into a random order, and I'm just going to take them one at a time off the list as they go. I'm just going to go straight down the list, and I'm going to cover each one probably as briefly as possible and then move on to the next and clear a bunch of things off the master list that I need to clear the list, but I don't want to pass up a chance to share some of this stuff with you guys. So I'm going to run through them, and then maybe in future episodes, we can have another fingertip segment where I just cover two or three of them. Just get a couple of things off the list that, you know, hey, it's been hanging around for a while. Let's cover two or three short topics. I was wanting to do this, 20 episodes ago. I almost did a fingertips episode back then and got off, you know, like a half dozen things that I was going to talk about. But finally, I'm going to do it. So enough confusing, pointless explanation. Let's get right into the fingertips. And the first one,
Bowling for Weirdos.
Yeah, bowling for weirdos. It's nerd culture. This one says, an evening with Colin and Brad. Yeah, a couple months ago, I went to an evening with Colin and Brad. Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood from Whose Line Is It Anyway? Ever since Whose Line went off the air, apparently their big money is touring the country doing a two-man improv show. And it's an improv show, but it's a really good one because it's Colin Mockery and Brad Sherwood. These guys are masters of the craft. And so we got to see it. I mean, it was right here in town even. This is how often does something actually come to my podunk, rinky-dink little town? It was great. It was absolutely great. And we watched the whole thing. You could tell that there's a couple of segments where it's obvious that they've done this bit before. And obviously they've done all the bits before. They do this on tour every frickin' night for how long. But some of them you could tell that they ask for a bit of information. Like, for example, you ask for, name us a Chinese dish, and you know that there's a list of like three or four things that are going to come up every single show. Someone's going to yell out mushu pork. Someone's going to yell, you know. And so, and they have prepared bits that go with those items. I didn't care for those sections so much. But then there's other sections of the show where it's clear that, you know, as they're playing off the audience, that they really are just making stuff up as they go. And it was funny, really funny stuff. I laughed really hard at Colin and Brad. So I had a good time with it. I just wanted to share. And the downside of that one was, here we are in this little local venue that, and it's not even that little. I just sat maybe 1,500 people in there. And we got up as we go to leave, and I was just amazed that still in this day and age, the floor was littered with garbage. That people, I mean, this was an indoor venue with, you know, all of the chairs set up and, you know, very nice, and there's huge garbage cans at every exit and all this. And yet people still left, you know, they're under some guy's seat, there's four beer bottles. There's, you know, oh, there's all of his candy wrappers. There's all their garbage just piled up because apparently nowadays people still think that it's okay when you're in a theater of any sort to just throw your garbage anywhere. Yeah, they pay people to clean that up. I'm creating jobs is what I'm doing. Oh, I hate that. It's just crazy. All right, next on the list.
Nerd Rage.
Oh, that's right. It's a Nerd Rage. This is, it says, Pathfinder Age Categories is what the topic says. This one has driven me nuts since first edition Dungeons & Dragons. All right, I have no problem with the idea that elves live for, I think, in the original first edition D&D, it was like 2,000 years. I think in current D&D and Pathfinder, elves live, you know, 750 is something like their upper range. Although I did not realize, by the way, that as I had looked over the charts for these, that the longest lived of all the races, I did not know this. It's not elves anymore. It's all the half outsiders, the Azamar and the Tieflings and the Oreads and all the ones that are half outsider of some sort. Yeah, they all, they hit adulthood at like 60, 70 years old, and then they live for like, you know, maximum 850, but you know, they live a long damn time. They can just stretch on and on forever. But anyway, the part about the age categories that bugs me, I don't mind that, you know, you don't reach, you know, if you're a dwarf, you're not going to reach middle age until you're about 150, and then you're not really old until you hit 200, and you're not super old until 250. All that's good with me. What bugs me is the adulthood marker, that elves are the worst example because they've got the longest range. Elves are still children until 110. Really? Does that not seem stupid to you? All right, that it, on that same chart, you know, humans reach adulthood at 15. And so the youngest you can be as a human character is you hit adulthood at 15, and then if you're a barbarian or a sorcerer or whatever, you toss the die, you could potentially start off as a 16-year-old when you're playing a human. Okay? That's adulthood. And so for elves, the equivalent of that is 110. I mean, starting elves are anywhere from 110 to 170 years old. I don't know if I can convey this, but that's stupid. I don't have any problem with you living forever. I don't have any problem with you aging slowly, but the idea that it takes you 110 years of childhood to get it together, that's crazy. All right? You're the equivalent of an 11 or 12-year-old when you're 70? And then you get to that equivalent, the mental equivalent of a human 11 or 12-year-old as an elf. And now you live another 40 or 50 years. And you're still not an adult. You still haven't figured out enough to go out and live on your own. You still aren't smart enough to make your way in this world, that you have to wait till 110. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. It makes no sense. And they even recognize this because, do you know what adulthood is for half elves? Okay. Cause human, adulthood at 15 and elves adulthood at 110. So if you're a half elf, where does adulthood fall? Midway in between? What do you think? 50 years, 60 years? No, 20. 20. You know why? Because they realized how stupid that was, that, oh, but what if I'm a half-elf and I've been raised by my human parent? Well, crap. Then
they'll be dead, and I'll still be a child being raised by my you know, half-siblings who are still human. That somehow you have to be passed along from generation to generation of humans before you finally reach adulthood? Yeah, they realized how stupid that was, so they changed it. And yet, I just don't – it makes no sense to me. So in my games, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I don't care what race you are, maximum for adulthood is like 20-25 tops. Okay, I can see maturing a little more slowly, taking a while to develop, but the idea that you're going to take a century before you figure out how to live by yourself, a century, that's just stupid. And I can't believe that no version of this game has ever changed any of that. The societal implications of that, what does a society look like where somehow your children simply don't develop for decades at a time? How does that, you know, it's, and I'm not saying it's not possible. It's certainly possible to have a society where childhood lasts for a century and that you go through all of these super slow developmental stages for whatever stupid biological reason, and that somehow their brains, even though they've got 50 years of conversing and learning and schooling, 50 years, and they're still somehow not picking up on the vitals. All right. I can see that that could exist, but that has some real societal implications that somebody would need to address in how these races and cultures develop and how they function. Someone would have to – it's just dumb. It's just – all right. Have I gone on long enough? Screw it. Let's go to the next one.
Bowling for Weirdos.
Oh, Gonzo, more nerd culture. This one says Joelville. Joelville is a wing – just one hallway in the building I work in. I've talked about Joel a lot of times. Joel is my wonderful nerd buddy who who works right in the building just down the hall from me, and he stops in the office all the time, and we talk game stuff and nerd stuff, and he's a fan of the podcast and great guy. And so Joel, the medical offices for our building were also in Joel's wing. He's not really part of our department. They contract anyway. He's got an office in the building. Don't worry about it. And so the facility decides to restructure and they move everybody else out. And so all that's left is Joel. He is the only person left in a big long hallway that, you know, literally you go down this hallway and there's, 12 to 20 rooms down this way, maybe 16 rooms going down this way. There's a lot of rooms. There's a lot of doors, a lot of little offices, and all of them are completely empty except for Joel. He is the only person down there. So to be funny, I made up a big banner that says Joel. It says "Welcome to Joelville, Population 1." I thought that was cute, and we got some wire and we hung it up in the hallway. So as you walk down that hallway, it's hanging from the ceiling. Big old sign that says Joelville, and we thought that was adorable. And then when Joel wound up being super sick and he was out for a week, he actually had to go to the hospital for a while. We actually changed the sign so it read Population 0, and we had a little sad face on it, and we sent that to him. Anyway, we just thought Joelville was funny. But it's been there long enough. That sign is still hanging there. And it's been there long enough that as people now, they've, you know, occasionally they've moved some people down there temporarily and then they move them back. Or actually Joel's dad and his other coworker, they're all in the same department. They're all moving down there. But as people move in and out of there, everyone refers to it as Joelville. I mean, as honestly, they have sat in meetings, management meetings, where they're talking about, well, we need to do all this repainting and remodeling down here. What are we going to do? Well, we can move a couple offices down to Joelville. And nobody blinks an eye at that. They say Joelville in a meeting and everyone knows where you're talking about. And that's just what the hallway is called. That's just the name of it. I love this so much. I can't even stand it. This is, it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous. And so now that they've got three of them in his department and they're all down there together, they've been thinking about changing the name because they want something that reflects the fact that they're all there. I'm like, no. Cause once you establish the pattern of, okay, we can change the name when we get new people, or we can change the name when things change, well, then it loses its meaning. It's not going to be Joelville. It's not going to be, you know, it's no longer something that everyone knows. It's just a joke at that point. But right now it's not a joke. It's Joelville. I love that. And so what I'm predicting, what I'm hoping for, is that 15 years from now, after Joel has, you know, accepted some management position and moved on and he's in, you know, working in another city, there's no more Joel. His department doesn't even have offices in this building anymore. They've completely repurposed it. The sign is gone. And yet 15 years from now, after all traces of it have been removed, there will still be people in the building who refer to it as Joelville. And when new people come in, they say Joelville. What? Yeah, that hallway. It's called Joelville. That's what we – that people will call it Joelville and not even know why. I think that's brilliant. I am so looking forward to that. I got to wait around 15 years and I guess not change jobs or positions or move anywhere so that I can see this happen. I suppose that's the price I pay to follow up on a joke, right? So I just love Joelville.
Science.
Ooh, science. All right. 3D printing with metals. 3D, this wasn't huge. It just, that there was a story that you could use 3D printers now that have been modified to print with metal. You can create sturdy, durable metal objects with 3D printers. It's just, you know, look, we all love 3D printers. We all have this huge, huge love on for our 3D printers. And so this is just one more stage in it. Originally, it was 3D printers printing in plastic, and then 3D printers that could print with food and chemicals. That, you know, 3D printers could create all sorts of, you know, biological type stuff. Now 3D printers can print in metal. They've found a way to do it. So, okay, I thought that was pretty cool. And then I was going to do some more research and develop a big thing, but I realized that, yeah, you know what? We're all excited about 3D printers. Let's wait till they, start hitting some really big new milestones, and then we'll start getting excited again. That was that one. Then, next item, Roku! I told you I was watching Sherlock, that I could not get enough of Sherlock. I can't get enough of Sherlock. I'm tearing out my hair because I've watched everything that's available on Netflix streaming, at which then I went and looked, and no, it's also exactly what's available on Hulu Plus. It's also exactly what's available That's all I get. 6 episodes. That's it. That's 2 full seasons, by the way. Did you know that? Yeah. That Sherlock as a British series, a British TV show, again, each season here is referred to as a series there. I just learned that fact, so I'm going to keep sharing it with you. So series 1 was 3 episodes, and each episode is an hour and a half long. I mean, it's a full-length movie. I assume they aired it with commercials, so therefore it would have been a 2-hour production. Maybe they don't air those with commercials. It doesn't make any difference. Anyway, it's a feature-length movie for every episode that they do. And so season 1, 3 episodes, wonderful, amazing, and then it bleeds right into season 2, 3 more episodes, and I've seen them all, and it's brilliant. And now season 3, apparently they just finished up season 3. It's not available on streaming yet. There's 4 episodes for that one. Ooh, bonus time. And I just can't get enough. I think the interplay between the two main characters, Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch, watching them do their back and forth, Sherlock has developed as a really sincere character that you can't watch this and not fall in love with it. You can't not like this show. It is so good, and it's available free. And I watched all 6 episodes. So what's 6 times an hour and a half? 9 hours worth of material. Watched it all in about 3 days because I could not stop. I wound up losing sleep because I was staying up too late because this is the trick. You lay down and you think, okay, hey, you know what? I've got about a half hour before I really need to be asleep. I just want to unwind a little bit. I'll watch the first half hour. And then I'll save the rest so I can watch like another half hour tomorrow and then I'll be done, right? That works out perfectly. No, of course not. Now suddenly it's midnight and I'm like, oh, I've got to go to bed. I've got to stop doing this. It's addictive. Sherlock is the writing is very good. The logic is really good. It's a TV show. Obviously you're going to find some stuff that there's some plot holes, but ignore that because you don't care. The characters are what drives it. The characters are amazing. And the visuals, it is innovative. It is when Sherlock is thinking, when you're inside his head, when you're seeing text messages or computer information, it is visually very innovative in how they present information to you. And it's one of those things that I'm looking at it now, and I know that 10 years from now or 15 years from now, we're going to be introducing people to Sherlock going, oh, come on, no, you got to watch Sherlock. Come on, it's streaming. You can watch it. Just watch it for free. Come on, let's go. And they'll watch it, and to them it'll be passé. This is the kind of visual stuff that they're doing in Sherlock is the kind of stuff that everybody's going to be doing 5 years from now, right? And stuff that 15 years from now everyone's going to go, God, that's so old-fashioned. Seriously? Come on. This is like after Star Wars came out and he would do the screen wipes to do transitions from one to the next. All right, you famously remember right at the beginning when the land speeder is going across and suddenly screen wipe to the next scene. And it was innovative at the time, visually very striking, and everyone loved that. And then it got to the point where, yeah, screen wipes just became the lazy man's transition. It was no longer cool. And in fact, now you go back and watch Star Wars, and as much as I love Star Wars, the original three, you see those screen wipes, and it's like, it feels kind of hokey and old fashioned now, but that's only because everybody else in the world has done it now. All right. It was innovative in its day. And I think that's what's going to happen to Sherlock, but that doesn't matter. See, because everything else about it is so good. And even that, like I say, right now, striking, innovative, but it's the kind of thing that this is going to be a trendsetter. And I love this show. I love this show. I cannot wait for season three to come out. And I'm not going to give you anything away because they ended it on an amazing cliffhanger at the end of season two. They end this huge cliffhanger and you're like, but that can't, how it did. And then they give you this reveal and you're like, okay, well, I knew that. We obviously knew that because we know there's going to be another season, but how? And I don't get to know now. I gotta wait. I probably have to wait almost another year for the next four episodes to come out on streaming. This is going to kill me. I don't want to go buy DVDs. I don't want to even rent the DVDs. I just want everything for free. Can't I get that? Well, or not free. I want everything for my $8 a month. I pay $8 a month. I deserve more Sherlock. Next up. History. Hey, it's some history. This one, I was looking at calendars because I'm fascinated by calendars. I really am. Different ways of calculating your year, different ways of interleaving your leap days during leap years, or rather some calendars have leap weeks or even leap months. You can do all sorts of different things. Calendars where every date of the year is always on the same day. So, you know, my birthday would always fall on a Tuesday every single year. There's ways to, you know, and ones that have to, okay, well, but we have to have a calendar that lines up so that Christian Easter can fall, you know, can still be calculated properly. Or we have to have calendars that need to have equal quarters because, oh, 13-month calendars are awesome, but so many businesses operate on quarters. So we need to take that into account. There's lots of really creative ways of doing it. But that's not really even where I'm going with this one. This one, one of the calendars I saw was the dates are listed in HE. They're listed in Holocene era, which I thought was interesting. And so right now, do you know what the date is today in Holocene era? Do you know what year it is in the Holocene calendar? It's the year 12014. Because really Holocene is just, your standard common era dates, or AD dates. You just take your standard common era date and you add a 10,000 in front of it. So instead of 2014, it's 12014. That's it. All right. Why? This is what I liked. Why would you do that? Because the Holocene era calendar is basically saying, hey, let's start our calendar. Let's start year zero at the beginning of human civilization, which was roughly about 10,000 BC or BCE, if you prefer. So 10,000 BC is roughly the start of human civilization. That's roughly when we started settling down, moving into a more sedentary lifestyle, sedentary as in we're not marching all the time. We're no longer stuck in this hunter-gatherer foraging stage. We can actually begin some agriculture, and that was the key, was the agriculture. And that happened about 10,000 BC, about 12,000 years ago. And so as I'm looking at that, and I thought that's actually kind of clever, because really, you know, you go 12,014, you just add 10,000 to it. You don't even have to change most stuff. You know what? It's still, you know, the date today is still 3514. It just happens to be 12,014 instead of 2014. Nice and easy. All right. Really easy to calculate, really easy to work with. And so I thought, how convenient that it's 12,000 years ago. How convenient that 10,000 years, before the Roman era, 10,000 years before the birth of Christ, 10,000 years. How convenient that it's a nice round base 10 number, to work out how long civilization's been around. And so I go back to do some research to go, how close is it to that really? And as it turns out, pretty darn close. The next thing it says here, because this history segment says Holocene era, and then it says, Göbekli Tepe. Göbekli Tepe. Yeah, I can't pronounce anything. Göbekli Tepe is an archaeological site in Turkey. And it is one of the first, because they always say that civilization, farming at least, agriculture, probably began in the Fertile Crescent around the Mesopotamian era. And Turkey is certainly relatively close to there. And Göbekli Tepe is an archaeological site where they have actually found real buildings, real signs of agriculture, real signs of, so they've got, you know, they've got all these different layers. Once I started delving into this rabbit hole, did you know it's like, there's the pre-Neolithic pottery era A, and then after that is the pre-Neolithic pottery era B, and then after, it was mind-numbing detail. And I went into a bunch of research on this thinking I would have a lot of interesting stuff to dish out. But really, really all I wanted to say was, hey, Holocene era. Add 10,000 years to your date and you're good. I thought that was pretty cool. And Göbekli Tepe, again, this is where you start seeing, that they know that agriculture has become an influence because you first start seeing dedicated granaries, like actual, they found the remnants of actual buildings, set in between some of their other ones that were constructed specifically for holding grain, for holding their harvest. And also, one of the big motivators at this time, once you've got all that grain, what do you do with it? That's when they learn to make beer, baby. See? That's what motivates a society. Let's move on to the next one. I think it's more science.
Science!
Yep, that's definitely more science. TESS. T-E-S-S, TESS. The Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite. Well, why bring that up? Because it's exoplanets, for God's sake. Because this is the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite is going to be launched in 2017. So this is going to be a full year before James Webb launches. And you know how much I love the James Webb Space Telescope. And the TESS Survey Satellite, its entire plan is this sucker is going to be finding exoplanets. That's all it does. It is going to survey the night sky. Well, survey the entire sky. But it's going to be specifically looking at fairly bright stars that are fairly close to us, looking for anything roughly Earth size or bigger, and it's going to be finding stuff by looking for transits in front of the star. And I got really excited because, as far as I'm concerned, finding more exoplanets, and it's predicted that it's going to find another 1,000, 5,000 exoplanets, 10,000 exoplanets during its first 2 year survey. It's pretty ambitious. So I mean, as far as I'm concerned, between that and James Webb, yeah, tag them and bag them. We are going to catalog exoplanets like nobody's business. I love exoplanets. But the next thing is, but it's only looking for them using transiting, meaning the planet has to pass directly in front of its star or directly between its star and us for us to be able to measure it and catalog it. And it's going to provide us a whole bunch of information. But then here was the line that caught me is that it would be planets with orbital periods of up to 2 months. Yeah. Orbital periods of up to 2 months. Do you know what that means? That means we're looking for planets whose year is generally going to be no more than 2 months long. That means those suckers are sitting right up next to their star. They are right in the fry zone. I mean, that is horrifically close. That's Mercury close. That's closer. I mean, it depends on the size of the star, actually. But that is rough. So we're not looking for habitable planets, but we are looking for lots of information about exoplanets. And then again, you know, hey, let's start cataloging them. Let's start tagging them. Let's figure out what they are, where they sit. And then, again, James Webb comes online. We might actually just get to look at them. Now that we know where they are, just point the James Webb straight at them and go, hey, look, I can actually see the color of that sucker. I don't want to get my hopes up. James Webb is really the king here. But again, we'll see what happens. 2018. 2017 for TESS, 2018 for James Webb. Fingers crossed.
And now for something completely different.
This one just says safe driving. I think I had a whole bit about the benefits of safe driving that, you know, 'cause I personally don't, I'm a bad driver. I'm a horrible driver. I just got to tell you that right now. I do not pay attention well enough. I'm just not good at driving. And people have told me that for years, and it took me a long time to accept that. I suck at it. And it appears that my two oldest sons, who can both drive now, are both just as bad at driving as I am. damn it. But anyway, things happen. That's what I get. And so I very rarely speed. If I do speed, it's usually just because I wasn't paying attention. I hit the accelerator and I forget to hit cruise and I suddenly look down and realize, oh my God, I'm doing 67. Whoa, slow that back down. I usually peg my cruise control at like 2 miles over the speed limit. So if I'm in a 65 zone, I'm going 67. And I'm actually thinking I might not even do that anymore because what's the point? It never gets me there that much sooner. I mean, what am I shaving a minute off my time, depending on how traffic functions? I'm not saving anything, you know, most of my drives, even if I'm going, you know, a 6 hour drive, you know, what am I going to save? 20 minutes off of a 6 hour drive? Just plan your time better. As I'm looking at this, I realized that, yeah, I had this whole thing worked up, but this is, I think, why this one keeps getting pushed off down the master list, because it's just not that fascinating. It's a cute little tidbit about me, and it would have been a great thing for me to bring up if someone had asked about it on the Podomatic. I could just, you know, then I could rattle off about my driving habits, and hey, you're the ones that ask, but here I'm inflicting it on you? It's a little subpar for me, I think. We'll move on.
And now for something completely different.
Okay, something completely different from that. The girl from Better Off Dead. I don't know if you remember her. Diane Franklin is the actress's name, and she's still a working actress, but she was Monique, the French foreign exchange student in Better Off Dead. She was Princess Joanna in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, and she was also, I don't remember the character's name because I've only seen the movie once and it was years ago. But she was the new girl at school in The Last American Virgin, a teen comedy from 30 years ago or whatever it was. And the reason I bring up Diane Franklin, because she had those three movies that were fairly notable. And if you go to her IMDb page, I'm sure it says known for, and that'll be the three that'll appear first. But she hasn't done a whole lot since then. But I bring her up because when I was in high school, I was completely and totally in love with Diane Franklin. She was the most gorgeous, the cutest girl ever. I loved her. And specifically, what was really odd, you have to go back and look at her as Monique in Better Off Dead especially. Her as Monique and her as the girl in Last American Virgin. She was young then. I think she was 20, 23 when she made those movies, something like that. But she looked exactly like a girl from my high school, and I was like 15 at the time, a girl named Alicia. And Alicia was just stunning, totally in love with her. And weirdest thing, that we lived on an air base at the time. She was also a military family. And we had... my folks lived in a huge, my whole family, we lived in a huge house. All right. My dad was a squadron commander for, I think he did a maintenance squadron first and then a flight training squadron later. And our house was on what they called Colonel's Row. My dad wasn't a colonel, but we were on Colonel's Row. And Colonel's Row was old Revolutionary War housing that was 3 stories tall, full basement, 3 stories tall. They were duplexes, so they were split right down the middle, and my brother and I lived on the third floor in what were originally the servants' quarters, so we had our own kitchen on the third floor, huge separate bathroom with this giant clawfoot tub, and it was a massive house. But that's not relevant to the story. What is relevant to the story is I had this wild schoolboy crush on Alicia from my school. Thought she was gorgeous, and she looked exactly like the girl from Better Off Dead. Just uncanny. Absolutely uncanny how much she looked like her. And Alicia, her family wound up, her dad got promoted, and they wound up moving into our building. Like I told you, it's a duplex, so it's this gigantic 3-story house, and it's split down the middle, so we're on one half, and she moved into the other half. Like her bedroom would have been right on the other side of the wall from, well, not from my bedroom. That would have been way too cute. Actually, right on the other side of the wall from my brother's bedroom. I had the outside where the fire escape was. She was just right on the other side of the wall there. And it was just agonized. We even, you know, if we had wanted to, because here's in my, you know, boyhood fantasies, my nerd fantasies, that, you know, hey, if we had ever hooked up, if we had, you know, if we had fallen in love and we had been, you know, whatever, then our houses actually even had an adjoining door in the basement that we could have, you know, we could have snuck away from our families to go down to the basement, and we both unlock our side of the door because they had huge bolt locks on either side, so each family could keep the other one out, obviously. But yeah, we could sneak down there and open the bolt locks, and we'd be able to see each other, and oh, it would have been so sweet and romantic. And of course, I barely talked to her ever. I mean, like, we stood waiting for the bus at the same bus stop every single day for like a year and a half, and did I ever speak a word to her? Oh, barely. Barely. I'd say hi. That's about it. Yeah, okay. Yeah, hi. That's it. It's pathetic, really. That's no real point to this. I just wanted to tell that story, apparently. So anyway, the Diane Franklin, who I was completely and totally in love with, I wish she had done more at the time, and whatever. But it leads right to my story of Alicia, who looked just like her. Weird.
Bowling for weirdos.
Oh, more nerd culture, Gonzo. All right. This one is the Nerd Pride Drinking Game. And the Nerd Pride Radio Drinking Game, I have wanted to develop this topic for a long time because there are certain words and phrases, you guys know this, that I say all the time. There are, you know, I can't go 3 minutes on this podcast without telling you how much I love something, how awesome something is. How we did something and it was tons of fun. I do that all the time. There's a whole string of words that I use constantly, and I keep telling myself I really need to get better about those. I need to really, really get out of thesaurus and find some better adjectives and intensifiers, and yet I haven't quite gotten to it yet. And so I've been wanting to develop this topic for the list of things I say way too often, and that if we had a Nerd Pride drinking game that revolved around those phrases, you would all be wasted in the first 5 minutes of this show. But I haven't really gotten far enough on it, and I don't think I ever will. In fact, I just now saw this topic come up on the list, and I very nearly just skipped it. It's just one that just didn't quite make it for me. So, all right, you know what? I'm going to cross this one off the list. Maybe we'll have a topic for it on the forums. Yeah, whatever. But instead of that, let's do
science.
Hey, more science. We all love science. This one's actually kind of a depressing one. My son came to me, and this was actually recently, and said he was reading an article basically saying that printers prove that auto cars are never going to happen. Really? That's depressing. And he starts to explain it a little bit, and I got the gist immediately. And I kind of wish I had gone and looked up the article he was talking about to get some more detail, and then I could give some attribution for it. But the gist is that just think about the printers in your office, your place of business. Think about shared printers, or even if you don't have a shared printer, think about your own printer. And the printers are little things. I mean, yeah, they've got moving parts, but it's not a huge complicated machine, like, say, a car, for example. How often do printers screw up? What do you say the error rate is on printers? How often are they jammed? How often is something wrong with the printer? I just keep clicking print and nothing happens. How often do they need to be rebooted? I have 20 networked printers in the building I work in. How many calls a week out of 20 printers, how many calls a week do I get specifically that the network printer is having a problem? Maybe two or three in a week. You know, sometimes less, sometimes a lot more. Okay. So imagine all that. Now, let's apply that rate to cars. Printers are a big deal for businesses, and yet we cannot perfect those to save our stinking lives. Cars, when I want my auto driving system, when I want to get into my car and I want to kick back and just listen to music and watch TV and play my podcast and just chill until the intelligence in my car gets me where I'm going, or the automated system guides my car to where it's going. I just want to kick back and I don't want to have to drive. I want a fully automated traffic system. I've been praying for that for how many episodes now? And think of all the things that have to go right to make that work. And what sort of error rate is going to make this completely unfeasible due to lawsuits and safety issues and everything else? What error rate do you think will completely kill this idea? What do we have to overcome to make it happen? I mean, is an error rate of 1 in 1,000 acceptable? Ooh, I seriously doubt it. You know, not with the, I mean, like 1 car in every 1,000 is going to have some kind of screw up, every week. Yeah, that rate would be a phenomenal rate if it was printers. But for cars, 1 in 1,000 is completely unacceptable. 1 in 10,000 each week? Wow, 1 in 10,000. We have how many millions of cars? So that would mean every week we have how many tens of thousands of automobile errors due to our automated system? Tens of thousand errors every week? No. Okay, so 1 in 10,000 isn't really acceptable. 1 in 100,000? We're now moving into the territory of clearly unachievable by our current technology. Clearly, we can't make a damn printer work. How are we going to do it with cars? And I'm following this logic, and I can't refute it. I wish I could. I so want my auto car. I want it so bad. But I don't see a practical way to make this happen. I see cars making us safer and assisting us. I'm good with that. But not driving by themselves. And that's just a shame. Although, what was it? I can't remember. Just recently, a car that can critique your driving. Oh, I want that so bad. I really do. I can't even tell you how badly I want a car that critiques my driving. It sounds like a big pain in the ass, doesn't it? It sounds like the most horrible thing in the world to have your car telling you, there's a red light 3 blocks ahead. You might want to start slowing down now. I don't know if you see that vehicle pulling out from the side. Excuse me, but the speed limit's going to change here in just 2 seconds, Mike. All right. That sounds terrible, doesn't it? To have your car constantly giving you traffic reminders, or specifically, if you're actually doing something illegal or dangerous directly, it'll say, yeah, you need to slow down now. Yeah, you really need to slow down. That would piss off everybody, except me. And I would be annoyed at it. Yes, I would be annoyed, and I would yell at it constantly. I mean, how many times would I be driving along, have my car talking to me, and I'd be going, yeah, I know. Yes, I know. Yeah, I would do that all the time, but I would love it. I would love having it. You know why? Because did I tell you I was a crappy driver? I'm a crappy driver. I'm so bad at driving that I would love to have that nagging voice there telling me, because it would mean I'd be paying attention. It would mean I'd actually be looking. I am probably the only person in the world who is praying for my car to nag me about my driving, but I would love that. I would just feel that much safer. And to be able to install that for my kids, who, as I've mentioned, are also crappy drivers, Oh, like a dream come true. That would be good. All right, if I can't have my auto car, I want a nagging car. I know, sounds like a nightmare, but I'm telling you, saves lives. Okay, I'm at 45 minutes now, a little bit over. This is long. I thought I would get through a lot more of these than that. Let me just scan through the next half dozen items. Is there anything I want to talk about before we pass it off? Yeah, there's some really good stuff coming up, but you know what? We'll save it for next time, all right? Fingertips, maybe I'll kick out 2 or 3 of these every couple of episodes, maybe more often. Just something to get these things off my list and be able to share them with you guys, because otherwise you're never going to get all this magical nerdy goodness, and it needs to be coming at you, right? Having done with the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast, before we start our Podomatic, what do we get? That's right. I actually remembered the badass movie quote of the week. And I told you last time, since I forgot it last time, I would bring you 2 this week. I completely and totally lied to you. I only have 1. But it's a damn good one. I'm not going to tell you where it's from. Quote, Janie, today I quit my job. And then I told my boss to go fuck himself, and then I blackmailed him for almost $60,000. Pass the asparagus. All right, end quote. That was not the right presentation of that, but that's how I hear it in my head when I read it, because that was Kevin Spacey in American Beauty when he's finally discovered his personal freedom, that he has, you know, the car he always dreamed of. He's working out to get the body he wants so that he can look good naked. That's the only thing he wants. He figured out that if he stands up for himself, he can get pretty much anything he needs and wants. And that line, the whole, yeah, I basically just blackmailed my boss and I'm set for life. Oh yeah, pass the asparagus. As if it's nothing. Knowing how his wife is going to freak out. Knowing how she's going to completely lose it on this one. It was a beautiful, grand moment. That was a man taking possession of his own life by, you know, doing something horribly immoral and illegal. And yet, you know what? After all the crap that was dumped on him through this movie, we all felt he deserved it, right? It was awesome. So that is our badass movie quote of the week, which leads us straight to the Pod-O-Matic. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on our forums. I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And R2 has a number for us, but before that, hey, send me some more Pod-O-Matic entries, guys. Stan is kind of dominating here because he's got he's the only one who sent me one since I started up. Come on, this is episode 4 now since I restarted. I'm back. All right, I'm good. You guys can trust me for a little while. I mean, until I get bored or, you know, summer hits or whatever. But for now, I'm here. So send me some stuff. Love to hear from you guys. First one is number 96 from a Mr. Serious Paul, who asks us, could Xena beat Sonic the Hedgehog? All right, I don't know what your obsession with Xena is, because last week you asked me, you know, you said Xena can obviously beat Batman, and therefore, since Batman can beat Superman, can Xena... All right. And I realized that I let your Jedi mind tricks work on me. You just made the assumption straight up that Xena could beat Batman, and you stated it as such a bald fact that I was concentrating more on the whole transitive can she beat Superman property. And I realized afterwards when I re-listened to the episode, I'm like, what am I kidding myself? That's stupid. Batman would totally wipe up the floor with Xena. You know what? I know she's, you know, an ultimate warrior princess. I don't care. Is Batman. And Batman would take her out. Batman's got his gadgets. Batman's got a much sharper mind than Xena. You know, she's great and all, but it's not going to happen. Now, this week, can Xena beat Sonic the Hedgehog? I imagine so. I mean, because really, when you're battling Sonic the Hedgehog, he is a hedgehog who runs really fast. It's just a matter of if she can get a shot in. I mean, if she can just, you know, lure him into a trap, just predict where it is he's going to run, you know, just stand in front of those rings he's always going for. I don't know. All she has to do is connect one time. And it is over. If until that point happens, you know what? Is Sonic doing much to Xena? I doubt it. I doubt it. He's a hedgehog, for goodness sake. I granted, you know, he's a 3-foot-tall anthropomorphic hedgehog who runs really, really fast, but I'm not impressed by that. No, I think Xena would take him out. Number 43. This one is from Mr. Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, do you give up anything for Lent? Well, how appropriate that this comes up. Lent is coming up very shortly, and yeah, usually I do. Usually I do something to try and better myself. There's been years where, you know, sometimes it's just a catch-all New Year's resolution pledge to you know, lose weight and watch what I'm eating and just be careful and all this. Or it's a pledge to, instead of giving up something, it's a pledge to, I'm going to exercise 3 times a week, or stuff like that. In the past, we've done things where, you know, for Lent, we decide that as a family, we're giving up TV for the entire 6 weeks of Lent. You know, something that we think will make us better as a family anyway. Although, again, if these are all things that are good to do during Lent, aren't they good to do all year long? I mean, why just Lent specifically? I understand. Lent is specifically about sacrificing something for God, showing your devotion, by showing that you are willing to go this extra mile to give up something or do something special or outstanding in order to show your devotion. In fact, for that matter, really, giving up something or doing something for Lent that is also intended for your own personal betterment. You know what? If it's losing weight, for example, well, I was wanting to lose weight anyway. And if I could do it for God, well, hey, so much the better. Well, that kind of defeats the purpose, because now you're really doing it, but you're doing it for selfish reasons. So it's kind of a toss-up. I'm not quite sure where I stand on Lent for this year. I mean, I've got like a week to decide. I haven't really figured it out yet. We'll see. Maybe I'll let you guys know next time. Number 54. Stan is in the house. Stan says, what is your favorite mythology? Norse. I just like Norse mythology. I always have. When I was a kid, started with Greek-Roman mythology and absolutely loved it. And then once I got to Norse mythology, I realized that the whole Nordic Viking barbarian appeal of that is just huge for me. And it's, you know, and it's no wonder that's a lot of where Lord of the Rings came from. It's a lot of what D&D is then based on, that whole archetype of that barbarian mythos, that swords and sorcery sort of stuff, is not a surprise. But that's what I like. I like Norse. Number 5 from Zimny. Zimny says, you just came across a $100 bill on the sidewalk. Holy blueberries, $100? How are you going to spend it? He actually wrote holy blueberries. I think that's awesome. Holy blueberries, how am I? In fact, I'm going to... As much as I like the phrase hot dog, I may start working in Holy Blueberries. How am I going to spend $100? More than likely, I am going to stick it in the big jar of money that I have in my room and just save it. That's probably what's going to happen. And I'm sorry, that's really sad. But if I had $100, say it was $100 in birthday money, and I'd feel really guilty just socking away my $100 and putting it away. I actually want to do something with it. I'd probably take my family out somewhere. God, if I had $100. Yeah, take my family out to dinner and a movie, which, you know, $100 actually may not even cover dinner or a movie because there's six of us. But it'd be something like that. Take my family out and go see something cool, and just have a good time. I would really enjoy that. Now, if I was going to spend it on completely on myself and be totally selfish about it, I would go nuts on buying game stuff. And when I say go nuts, I mean, it depends on what I'm buying. It really doesn't go as far as you think. But I may, I would go out and buy myself a Pathfinder supplement that I've been really excited about, but never quite brought myself to buy. And then I would pick myself up, a couple of new card games and then as many dice as the rest of the money would buy or something like that. That to me just sounds like fun. That's again, realistically, I would probably save it. If I had to spend it, I would spend it on taking my family out somewhere. If I had to spend it on me, it would be all gaming stuff. All gaming stuff. Absolutely. Number 28. This is Jeff Hawes. Hey, Jeff! Jeff says, a genie grants you a wish for one magical item that will work in the real world. It cannot be something that grants more wishes, and it needs to be relatively minor in impact. Call it the equivalent of a fourth level spell and lower. What is your choice? Ooh. Now, we did just do magical items, an episode or two ago? And this is similar. But, holy blueberries, I don't know. I really don't know. I wish I had more time to think about this one. But I'm probably I don't know. Again, last time I said I really want my boots of striding and leaping. I really like those. I love my boots of striding and leaping. They're awesome. But are they useful to me in real life? Not particularly. I mean, they'd be fun, but not really useful. What would be useful to me in real life? I don't know. If I had, you know, say a wand of teleportation, I only need enough charges on that to illegally secure myself a fortune, and then I can be done with it. Or, you know, similarly, my wand of invisibility, or my, you know, this is the same as when you ask people, well, what superpowers do you want? And strangely, now normally when you ask somebody what superpower would they like to have, I've always maintained that most guys, one of their first considerations for their superpower, most guys is, okay, will this power allow me, enable me to see women naked? And if so, then hey, that's a good power. But somehow when you ask me magic item, for some reason my first thought this time was, how could I use that to make some money? That's weird. Normally it's, how can I use that to see women naked? But this time, money. I don't know. I don't have a good answer yet, but you've made me think, and I like that. Number 16. This is Zimny again. Hey, Zim. Zim says, What happens when you get half scared to death? He's got that in quotes. What happens when you get half scared to death twice? Well, clearly, if you've been half scared to death twice, then you would be you know what? If you were a cat, you would only have 2 1/4 lives left. That's what would happen. 58. Dire cat. All right, dire cat. What is your favorite flavor of pie? My pie flavored. My favorite flavor of pie is probably, I don't know, I like pie. Okay, let me clarify. I don't like fruit pies because, you know, fruit, healthy. Even put into a pie with a ton of sugar, that's still too healthy for me. I've had cheesecake in a pie form that I love. Cheesecake's probably my ultimate favorite, but I don't mind a French silk pie, a chocolate pie. That's good. There's various forms of lemon pies. Not lemon meringue. Meringue is a little too much for me. Pumpkin pie. Pumpkin pie is the old standby. I love a pumpkin pie with a little Cool Whip on top. Pumpkin pie is awesome. If I have to pick just one, though, just one, if cheesecake is an option, then any kind of cheesecake pie is absolutely the winner. If not cheesecake, pumpkin. 83. From my brother Brasky. Pretend you're Conan the Barbarian's psychologist, and he's just told you his thoughts on the lamentations of the women. What kind of questions do you ask him about his relationship with his mother? Assume he left his sword in the waiting room. That is brilliant. You know what? You know, to see them driven before you, to hear the lamentations of the women. That's a good question. Why don't I ever have time to think about these things? I don't even think that's fair. How do you ask him about his mother? Did you not see the movie? I'm pretty sure his mother was torn from him. Was he an orphan straight out the gate? Or was his family slaughtered when he was early and then he was traded into slavery? I can't remember. Oh, that would make a huge difference. Because I would assume as his psychologist, I would know whether or not he ever knew his mother. You know what? The question is funny enough by itself. I can't think of anything to add to that that's going to be significant. I am so sorry, dude. I wish I could do better for you. Number 49. This is from Stan. And Stan says, when they make the movie of your life, which actor will play you? And who will play Kyle? Ah, that is a good question. I will probably be portrayed by Val Kilmer. Yeah, old, fat, balding Val Kilmer. He's kind of let himself go. That's appropriate. I can accept that. I'm good with that. Who will play Kyle? Kyle will actually be played by young Val Kilmer. Because Kyle's the good-looking brother. That's clearly... Yes, that's... Okay, yeah, Val Kilmer and Val Kilmer. Ooh, double aught. I love double aught. I don't know why. Probably because double aught is a role that I dreamed of. Anytime we played a game that called for percentile dice, you dreamed of the double aught. You dreamed of the 100. And did it ever come up in game? Oh, almost never. So somehow I still get that visceral thrill of, oh, yes, crit. All right, we're ready. Anyway, number 100 is from Brasky. What is the most listened to song on your iPod or MP3 player? I don't know. I'm going to make a wild guess. Well, obviously I should go look, but I'm going to make a wild guess before I go look. I'm going to guess that the play count is highest because I don't even have an iPod or MP3 player right now. I just have it on iTunes. So I'm going to guess the highest play count is either for Sabotage by the Beastie Boys or Kielbasa by Tenacious D. Those are my two guesses, but let me go and look, and I'll actually give you a definitive answer. Okay, hold on. Sorry, this is not your fault for asking the question because my computer is going to take forever to do this. I got too much going at once. You know what? You guys should buy me a new computer. Get me something nicer. That would help. Okay, here we go. All right, all music, songs, sort. Oh my God, I was so wrong. Sabotage, not even in the top 30. Kielbasa, not in the top 30. Here's the problem, is that I forgot that it's iTunes, so it's going to count all of the plays from my wife's iPod, all of the plays from my kids' iPods. This is, oh, man. All right, but I was afraid it was going to be really embarrassing when I found out the number one, but it's not. I can live with this one. Number one, most played, and this is largely in part my doing, Fade by the Crazy Anglos. Oh, I love that song. Okay, that's a good one. And then if you want me to round this out, we'll give you a quick top 10. Number two, Club Villain, your favorite Martian. Love Club Villain. Ooh, TikTok by Kesha. Sorry. New York Groove by Ace Frehley. I love New York Groove. Oh, that song is so good. I heard that for the first time when we were at a, They Might Be Giants concert in, well, I say concert. They were playing at a club in Omaha and they were spectacular. I've seen them there twice. I love They Might Be Giants. And while we were there, the music that was just playing on the PA system overhead while we're waiting for the show to start, they played New York Groove, which somehow New York Groove by Ace Frehley, Kiss. It's by Ace Frehley. I had never heard the song before in my life, and it comes on overhead, and my wife and I both look at each other and go, wow, we have to own this song. We have to own this song. Love New York Groove. Next is, what are we up to? Number five, Sweet Home Alabama by Bama. This is the hip-hop rap version of Sweet Home Alabama. That's the song that I wish I could karaoke to. I so badly want to do karaoke to Sweet Home Alabama, this version of the rap version, and the karaoke guy does not have it, and I've made special requests, and he can't find a karaoke version of it. I've looked to see if I can find a karaoke version of it so I can just email it to him, and he can set me up, and we got nothing. Oh, I would so love to do that one. Loser by Beck, of course. Beverly Hills by Weezer. Yeah, no problem. White and Nerdy from Weird Al Yankovic. That one's my kids is doing, which I love the song as well, but my kids also love it. And then where are we? We get one more? If I Had $1 Million by Bare Naked Ladies. So that's a respectable top 10. I am not going to be embarrassed about any of that except for Kesha. But other than that, that is solid. You guys, I could listen to that. Yes. 84 from Zimnipot again. Zim says, who is your favorite author? You would think that favorite author would be something that would just leap right to the tongue, don't you? That I know what books I read. I know what books I have read in the past. I should really have an answer here. I've read, I don't know. I am going to go with Greg Bear. I haven't read anything by him in a long time, but Greg Bear is just solid. It's science fiction-y stuff, and it's always cutting-edge sort of science, usually with some sort of weird twist on it, with good characters and interesting plot twists and that kind of stuff. I really like Greg Bear's stuff. He is good. Stephen King I've read tons of, but I wouldn't call him a favorite. I've gotten really tired of Stephen King over the years. I mean, I'll still read stuff by him, and I'll still enjoy it, but it's not... it's not what it was for me. Man, I'm trying to think of some of the other things I've been, well, no. Right now, clearly George R. R. Martin. Oh my gosh. Yeah, the Game of Thrones, the Song of Ice and Fire. There's no competition on that one. I am absolutely enthralled by those books. I think it is some of the most fascinating writing ever, and I know it's overly complex, and I know it's huge, and I know, and a lot of it is his skill at world building, but his ability to build a cast of thousands of characters, and actually have not just dozens, but hundreds of characters that I actually know and remember and care about and am interested in, that is a talent. That man is amazing. George R. R. Martin, that would be the number one, I'm sure. But that was the end. That was all. So, all we need is GLaDOS to do a recap for us.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2014 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week started off with Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. I gave you snippets of Wonderful World by Sam Cooke and She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All these songs are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them, love them. I wouldn't include them on my podcast if I didn't personally love every single one of them. If you feel like doing something nice for this podcast, head on over to iTunes, write us a nice review, or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. Stop at the Facebook page, click like. It's just 9 seconds out of your day. You can do that for me. Don't forget to check out the free games I have available on our free games page. I say our as if there's more than just me. I should really just personalize this and quit pretending I'm a huge corporation or something, or even a tiny corporation. Check out the free games available on my free games page. Instant Game, Animal Ball Melee, Sandbox Hill, Spectacular Games. I got 2/3 of a dozen others, all free, all the time. You know, contact me. You can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com, and I promise I will actually respond to you. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up, you send me a message, we will hang out, become best buds, lifelong friends. We will have fun. Number 10, Mr. Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, what is the best dinosaur to ride into battle? Triceratops. Triceratops. It's clearly, it's a mount. It's a four-legged mount, and he's got the horns on the front, and the kind of the shield thing behind the horns. I mean, he's armored. He's tough. He is battle ready. Triceratops all the way. And I also think Triceratops as a vegetarian, is going to be a herbivore, as it were. I think he's going to be a little more manageable. He's a herd animal. I think he's just more mount material. You know what I'm saying? In fact, holy crap, how badly do I want a Pathfinder paladin with a magical Triceratops as his mount? That to his mount, he has summoned a Triceratops. I want to living in some sort of Saurian lands where the dinosaurs are common, and there's areas like that. Order of the Stick, Tarquin's kingdom does that with the dinosaurs everywhere. How cool is a Triceratops mounted paladin? Now, some of you are going to give me the whole, I need a T-Rex, well, whatever, or a Carnosaur, or some other huge, meat-eating raptor-like, whatever. Heck with you guys. Although, again, they would have the advantage of having the feathers and looking really badass. But they're unreliable. And, well, now Belkar has done really well. Belkar has done really well as a ranger with a Triceratops, a T-Rex mount. He did really good on that with Bloodfeast the Exterminator. Best name ever. But, best name. Oh, you know what? Oh, damn it. The fingertips this week, oh, I was so hoping we'd get to That's a Good Name. That's a new segment I want to do. That's a Good Name. You know what? I'm just going to do it for you now. I don't care. I like names. I dig names. I just, there's something about it. Every now and then you come across something, and I'm like, wow, that's a good name. That's, if I were writing a story, if I was putting together a character, if I was developing a game world, that would be a great name. I would love to have that name in my story. That would be awesome. And I take it from the movie Shakespeare in Love, where Shakespeare, you could tell as he's coming through, someone would describe something and he'd get a name and Shakespeare would just look up and go, wow, good name. I love that. And so for me, the one this week that just killed me this week, it's on my master list. My son, we were studying Spanish, he's taking Spanish in high school. And one of the words that came up was El Grapidora. And I thought, El Grapidora, or I suppose if you want to, it would be La Grapidora, but if you wanted to make it more masculine, you become El Grapidor or El Grapidoro. Either way, it's Spanish for the stapler, but I thought that would be, if I needed a Mexican wrestling name, all right, if I needed a luchador name, I would be El Grapidoro. That would be me, the stapler. That's a great name. Okay, but leaving that aside, backing up through Bloodfeast, the Exterminator, Belkar, T-Rexes, yeah, Triceratops, dude. Or, alternately, I can also imagine going in on one of the huge sauropods, one of the giant there's no Brontosaurus anymore, but the Apatosaurus, the other, whatever the giant ones are, the huge four-legged classic Brontosaurus-looking suckers. That would be cool. It's like riding into battle on a war elephant, that you have a platform built on the back, and you have got, you know, you guiding the thing with your worthless sword, because what are you going to be fighting from way up here? I mean, you're really just the driver, but then you've got a bank of archers behind you that are firing down on the hapless peasants below you. That would be pretty cool, too. But you want a cool mount. You want one where you can be the awesome lance-wielding warrior of death charging into the middle of the fray on the scariest beast ever. Triceratops is the way to go. That is the one. You can't convince me otherwise.